All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Lindsay, and as she said, thank you for the introduction. And yeah, I guess we'll just keep the ball rolling here with looking at systematic optimization of yield-enhancing applications, but focusing now on the genotype interactions. So to get things started, cultivar selection is the most important management decision that growers can make. And I always like to refer back to something that my advisor likes to say, and you've probably heard this too, and it's that garbage in equals garbage out. So if you select a cultivar with low yield potential, you can do everything correct to try and manage it, but at the end of the day, you're not giving yourself the opportunity to try and maximize yield on your farm. So to go along with that, new cultivars with different traits and genetic backgrounds are continually being introduced into the market and at a pretty fast pace. In addition, the use of external inputs in soybean production has also increased, and this includes inputs such as seed treatment, fungicides, insecticides, nematicides, and inoculants. Biologicals such as biological seed treatments, or LCO seed treatments, and also foliar applied LCOs. Additional nitrogen fertilizer, which was discussed pretty heavily yesterday afternoon, and also foliar fungicides and insecticides. However, we still don't have a great understanding of how cultivar selection interacts with some of these inputs, but more importantly, you know, how it interacts with multiple inputs. So to address this question, if you've been in here for the past couple talks, you know that the United Soybean Board recently funded a multi-state project nicknamed SOYA to study and identify and try and make management recommendations regarding input use and how those input uses interact with several different management practices, and those are listed here. And I'll be talking about the genetic interactions. So our objectives are to determine if cultivar selection interacts with input level, or in other words, does cultivar selection dictate which inputs we should be using? And we also want to try and quantify the effects of the inputs on yield components. So our methods include a three-year study, which was initiated in 2012. We had 8 collaborating universities, and those are listed at the bottom of this slide. There's research trials in 9 different states, and there's 2 locations per state. And Minnesota and Kansas actually went above and beyond the call, and they have 3 locations. So we have 20 locations each year. And the experimental design at each location is a randomized complete block with 4 replications. This slide here, if you were in here last talk, actually is exactly what Eric presented, and I just wanted to throw it up here again as well, just to give you an idea of where these locations can be found within each state, and also just to give you kind of the average maturity group that's being used at each of these locations, and that's represented by the color code and the little table on the left there. And as Eric said in his presentation, we basically range just from about a 2.0 bean in the north to about a 4.5 in the south. So for our treatments, it includes 6 different cultivars with high yield potential suitable for each location, and those were chosen by the agronomists in each state. And those were subjected to 3 different input levels. The first being what was called just the standard practice, in which the university recommendations for fertilizer and weed control were followed. And also just want to mention that row spacings at the majority of the locations were less than 76 centimeters. But other than that, there were no other external inputs. Our second level is our highest input level, which was the soya complete. And that comprised of what John talked about, kind of that complete seed treatment. It includes a fungicide, insecticide, nematicide, and an inoculant, and also a seed-applied LCO treatment. At V4, we had an application of foliar-applied LCO and also nitrogen fertilizer, and that was comprised of 84 grams per hectare of urea coated with agritain and also 84 grams per hectare of slow-release encapsulated nitrogen. At R1, we had an application of foliar fertilizer in the form of Task Force 2, and at R3, we had application of BioForge and foliar fungicide and foliar insecticide. And our final input level was very similar to that soya complete, but it was soya minus that foliar fungicide. One other thing I want to mention, at all of these locations, the seeding rate was 432,000 seeds per hectare. So for the data that we're collecting, in season, we take a spring plant stand at V1 to V2. We take weekly NDVI measurements. We also collect disease and insect ratings prior to that R3 application and also at R5. And as we get closer, as we get into harvest, we take another plant stand. We also do some pod counts in which we take a 1 meter of row and we count the number of plants in that 1 meter and also the total number of pods. And, of course, our big deal here is looking at yield, but we also are looking at seed size and also protein and oil content. But for today, we're just going to mostly focus on the yield part and just get a glimpse into a little bit of those yield component data. So for the statistical analyses, we've done a mixed model, ANOVA, using ProcMix and SAS. And I first examined each site year just to determine the frequency of significant cultivar and input differences, but most importantly, their interaction. And in this case, cultivar was treated as a fixed effect. And we also are looking at this as more of a regional scale, and we've grouped it into three different regions, being north, central, and south. And in this analysis, cultivar and location were treated as random effects. So looking at some of our preliminary results from the individual site years, only in 2 of 38 of the site years that were examined did we find a significant cultivar by management interaction. We found cultivar differences in 26 of 38 site years and input differences in 24 of 38 site years. Now moving into more of the regional analysis, here we're looking at yield combined across 2012 and 2013, and we'll start in the southern region. And with the graph here on the x-axis, we just have our input level and with yield on the y. And you can see the soya minus the foliar fungicide on the far right, it did not increase yield over the standard practice. But that soya complete input level did increase yield over both the standard practice and the soya minus the foliar fungicide. And the average response over both of those two treatments was about 3%. So it seems that in the south that we are getting that response from just the foliar fungicide. Moving into the central region, both the soya complete and the soya minus the foliar fungicide increased yield by about 7% over the standard practice. However, there was no difference between those two input levels. So in the central region, we're not seeing that added benefit from using the foliar fungicide. And finally, getting into to the northern region, the soya minus that foliar fungicide increased yield by about 5% over the standard practice. The soya complete increased yield by about 6.5% over that standard practice, but it also increased yield by almost 2% over that soya minus the foliar fungicide. And if we take a look at this across all locations, the separation in the treatments was pretty similar to actually into the northern region, except the response was a little bit lower. So the soya minus the foliar fungicide increased yield, a little over 3.5% over the standard practice. And that soya complete increased yield by a little over 5% over the standard practice. And again, the soya complete increased yield by about 2% over that soya minus the foliar fungicide. So our preliminary conclusions for yield, the significant bicultivar input interaction was not common. And so this suggests that cultivar selection does not dictate necessarily what inputs we should be using. The input effects were different for each region. And although we were seeing increased yield from these higher input levels, the grower return on investment would likely be given today's commodity prices. So really quickly here, I just wanted to introduce some of the yield component data, and I've just looked at this just presenting here today just across all the locations, and the first graph I have here on the left is just looking at seeds per meter squared. And you can see the soya complete and the soya minus the foliar fungicide are both giving us more seeds per square meter compared to the standard practice. However, there is no difference between those two higher input systems. Now, if we take a look at seed mass, again, both that Soya Complete and Soya Minus, the foliar fungicide, are giving us heavier beans. But this, when we add in that fungicide or that Soya Complete treatment, we are getting an even heavier bean with that. And if you remember how the, kind of the yields broke down across all locations, with the higher inputs, we're getting more beans. But potentially where that difference in yield from the Soya Complete to the Soya Minus foliar fungicide could be coming from the increase in seed size. So for future work, yeah, we're still trying to get collect all the 2014 data, and hopefully we'll be getting that in soon. I'm excited to take a look at that and get start analyzing it. One thing I still would like to try and do is examine this more by maturity group and see does maturity group interact with the input level. And it also may be a better way to, if we want to try and make more regionalized recommendations, this might be a better way to try and group that compared to just geography. I also want to try and utilize all this NDVI data that we've been collecting and potentially come up with an in-season yield prediction model that takes into account NDVI, which is something we can measure pretty easily, and also potentially maybe something about the cultivar information. But thinking farther into the future and thinking more big picture, I know we've had quite a few talks here today about this Soya research, and I think we can take what we've learned what we're learning from these projects so far and move that to more on-farm research as more of a kind of a verification, kind of similar to a lot of the verification trials that are being done, for example, down in Arkansas. And also I think there's a lot of room for investigating the physiological effects from these input use, and especially down to the molecular level, and really try and get at, when we apply these products, what is actually going on inside the plant. So before I stop, again, there's a lot of people to thank at these eight different universities. It takes a lot of manpower to try and get a project this size to work and proper functionally. Again, thank you to the United Soybean Board for funding this research. And thank you for your attention. And if we have time, I'd be happy to try and answer any questions. Yep, so the question was, in each region, how were the different varieties selected? And to go back to what you said, yes, these are commercial varieties. They're mostly made up of Monsanto and Pioneer Genetics, and they're just varieties that may be in the variety trials at that location. They're just high yielding potential. Yes. Yep. So the question was, have we looked at analyzing any of the disease assessments? And so far, doing a more formal analysis, no, I haven't done yet. But I have looked at the data, and really, so far for both 2012 and 2013, we really haven't had very much disease at all. And we have had SDS at a couple of locations, but that was in the central region. But again, the foliar fungicide isn't going to be controlling SDS. So no. So far, we're seeing a response kind of in the absence of high disease pressure.